The early 90s was an exciting but difficult time to be a queer person in the U.S. The AIDS crisis was still claiming so many lives, and after 8 years of President Reagan not even mentioning the word AIDS, and 4 years of President Bush's inaction, LGBTQ folks felt invisible, and our visibility was a matter of life and death.
In the spirit of making a political statement and shocking the squares, Joan Jett Black, backed by Queer Nation, launched her bid to become President of the United States with the catchy slogan, Lick Bush in 92. This bold political performance art would have been just a delightful footnote in the history of queer activism until this year, when Broadway director Tina Landau and Moonlight Oscar winner Terrell Alvin McCraney presented their new play, Ms. Black for President, now playing at the Steppenwolf Theater.
Today, Terrence Allen Smith, the artist behind the drag personage of Joan Jett Black, joins us to talk about that amazing time when a black drag queen ran for president of the United States of America, and how 27 years later, Black is back, and she's ready to make a big splash. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce people just like you. Thank you. Become a member at feastoffun.com/plus and access 15 years of legendary shows with amazing LGBT artists and entertainers. Plus, you'll get that warm, happy feeling knowing you're making Feast of Fun available for generations to come. Again, that website is feastoffun.com/plus.
I shouldn't be calling. I should be playing it cool. But that ain't me. Cause I want to know how you're feeling, to know what you're doing right now, and how bad can that be?
Hello?
Hi, is this Miss Black?
Sort of. This is her assistant. This is her assistant, me.
Terrence Allen Smith.
M-I-M-I-M-E-E.
How does Ms. Black like her coffee, Mr. Assistant?
Like she likes her boys.
How's that?
Real sweet, real light, you know, but...
And hot.
No, not that hot. Not anymore.
Cold and unable to love you back?
I dropped some ice in there nowadays.
Well, what have you been doing all these years since you ran for President of the United States? You were here in Chicago for a while, and then you moved to San Francisco.
I came out here because of the weather, because I was like, I'm not doing another winter. I'm just not. Girl,
I do not blame you. I don't blame you.
It's ugly. It's ugly every year. And I thought, I don't really have to do it. And I had quite a few friends out here. So I thought, well, I'll just do it. You know, there was no reason in particular. I wasn't running away from anything.
Well, what have you been up to in San Francisco?
Well, I worked at a different light bookstore for like 7 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the only place I have ever moved where people wrote about me before I got here.
Yeah.
They were like, Joan Jett Black is moving. You know, it was goofy. But I got a job at a different light in 4 days. You know, I mean, it was great. I came right at the very tail end of a good scene here in San Francisco. Can you hold on a second? I got to open the sugar and I'll be right back.
Yeah, fine.
I'm right here. Hold on.
Please hold.
I can't believe she put us on hold during the interview.
Well, she's got things to do, I guess.
Joan, are you there?
Joan.
Well, at least the music's nice.
I'm gonna find you.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Thank you.
You know, I really should be, being careful with sugar. I have a sister who lost a leg last year.
Honey, be careful.
I hope she finds it.
Yeah, it's too late. It's too late for me, okay? I shouldn't say that either.
Well, moving to San Francisco, I imagine that you've run to a lot of people who you tell them, hey, I'm Joan Jett Black. I used to run for president. And they're like, oh, sure you did, honey.
Yeah, there's a way to start that conversation. Because some people have looked at me like, bitch, what are you talking about? Right? But those people invariably will come to me at some point later and go, you weren't lying. I'm like, yeah, why would I lie about that?
Well, part of it is because we live in a world that's so dominated by drag queens that have corporate sponsorships that are on television, you know?
Yes.
And in the early 90s, you know, being in drag was really an act of rebellion. You had no expectations.
Yeah. It's always been an act of rebellion. It's always, and it still is, but not as much. You know, people like to think it's accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, in part, but Beckham, I mean, we're living in fear now of, you know, even though marriage is not the big issue, of that being taken away. If that man gets another 4 years, we'll have to get off this planet, okay?
Yeah, Clarence Thomas just this past week said he's open to the possibility of overturning the Supreme Court's decision on legalizing same-sex marriage. He did this week.
He said that this week?
Yes, ma'am.
I hate that man. Oh, my God. That's fucked up.
You know, I blame you. I blame you, Joan Jett Black, because you were not successful in running for president of the United States.
Oh, right.
You should have won.
Right. Right, so, just like you blame Hillary.
Yeah. Did you ever, like, you know, let's talk about that moment in time, because, you know, this all started as a piece of political protest performance art. Mm-hmm. And you had no expectations of winning, but you still had to take this very seriously.
Yes. And that's a fine line. That's a fine, crazy motherfucking line. Okay. Because you have to answer the question. And I made it a point to try to answer the questions that people would ask me without being stupid. You know, I actually got Pat Paulson to be afraid. We were on TV together, and he was like, oh, no. You know, it was great. It was
Who is Pat Paulson, for people who don't know?
Pat Paulson ran for president. He was on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour.
Okay, so he was a comedian.
He was a very comedian, but he was a very dry, droll fellow. But he ran for president in 68, I think again in 72. But, you know, his was a statement, you know, and we did a TV show together in 90-something. The wacky presidential candidates.
Well, you remember when Al Franken ran for, you know, senator in Minnesota, and people weren't taking him seriously.
Nope, they weren't. And, you know, and now, of course, now there's a clown, a real live, honest to God clown. And it doesn't seem so odd anymore, you know.
In 1992, you said at a press conference, you might think we're joking. Well, sorry. I think that the fact that the U.S. has the only industrialized country without national health care is a joke.
Is a joke, yes. Thank you. And you know what? I live in a state that has health care. That has come to pass for me. And you know, a lot of people in California, but that's pretty wild. You know, I'm like, oh, wow. I said I wanted to legalize drugs legally. And they got mushrooms in Oakland. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of wild to hear these things.
Trip,
you know,
your balls happen out. Yeah.
No, not no. No, we don't do that anymore either. I don't want to see things that aren't there. I really don't. I'm like, yeah, that's nice. Keep it over there.
Whose idea initially was to run for mayor in Chicago?
I don't, you know, it's hard to say because I don't remember. It was kind of a. No, it wasn't a blur. My friend's calling it a blur. No, it wasn't quite a blur. It was a discussion, you know, but I wasn't there for the mayor thing.
Yeah.
They decided, let's ask Joan if she'll run. Because I had done something, I spoke somewhere, and they're like, well, she's well spoken. Let's use that one.
Well, at the time you were known in the Chicago queer scene as a performer in nightclubs?
Yeah, well, performer at Lower Links. Okay. Performer at, you know, performance art kind of thingy, you know. But I had done quite a few plays at Park West and, you know, stuff like that. But
so you were more in the space of sort of being engaged with people on an intellectual level as a drag queen and not just as an entertainer for people who are drinking in clubs.
Yes, yes, much entertaining and to think about what, you know, we were doing, you know. And connected with magic, with the fairies. There was a lot of that energy, and it still is. Well, you know, I don't go to, wouldn't catch me dead in a fairy circle out here, honey.
Why not?
Because these queens out here are, they're just, they're fairier than thou. You know what I mean? They are fairier than thou, honey. You could not be as much of a fairy as these queens are. And some of them are nasty. A couple of them are, you know.
Well, part of it is, like a friend of mine said, that they traded their sort of religious fundamentalist upbringing for a new faith, but they're just as dogmatic in the way they see the world.
Yes,
and that's not all East radical fairies. In fact, a lot of radical fairies, like I'm a radical fairy too, you know. Yeah,
I remember when I went to Short Mountain. Mm-hmm. Went to Short Mountain, and they were having the morning circle, which is a serious morning circle. Me and Charlie and Eric and a couple of other people got one of the carts that they used to move food and rolled right through the middle of that circle. The older fairies were like, "Thank you, you get something, you know."
You gotta break up the monotony.
Radical, yeah. We had a lot. They had a Barbie circle and we tied firecrackers to Barbie. We're like, boom. You know, and they're like, "Oh my God, this is breaking up." Uh-huh, I know it is, bitch. We had a lot of fun stirring shit up, you know, and that's what I liked about the fairies. And it was interesting because I was politically doing that and I was spiritually doing that. You know what I mean? It was really kind of fitting, although she was fit.
And people like really took your run for president pretty seriously. Like, you know, I was watching just before we started taping this interview, the video that everybody shares. Bill Stametz, a video maker at the time, filmed your press conference at Ann Sather's restaurant.
Oh, my God.
And I'm recognizing like Tracy Baim. I'm recognizing all these like Chicago press people there in the audience at a very young age. And they're asking you very serious questions.
Good questions, yeah.
They were taking your platform on face value, and you had to strike the balance that you knew you were not going to win, but you were trying to influence the discussion.
A woman asked me that coming off the floor of the Democratic Convention. She said, "Well, wow, you know, I like your ideas. Why don't you run for real?" I said, "Because there's no way, right?" She said, "Well, what if it did? What if you did win?" Well, I said, the planet would have to spin the other way, and it's not going to do that. So, you know, that's just not going to happen. You know, some people were afraid for me. They're like, "You could get shot," you know.
Well, that's how I feel about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
She won.
I only felt that one time.
You felt in danger?
Well, when we marched in the St. Patrick's Day parade, that was scary.
Yeah.
Because they take that shit, you know, they take that shit seriously, honey. The river is green. Mm-hmm. They don't fuck around. And when John Cullerton gave us his spot, people were like, "What?" And when Queer Nation and ACT UP marching down the street, the judges turned their backs on us.
Wait a second. So somebody, you didn't get permission to march in the parade, but somebody said, "Hey, take my spot."
We got, Senator John Cullerton gave us his spot.
The judges who were judging like the floats in the parade. They turned their backs
down there on Wabash. I'll never forget.
Evil fuckers.
And it was we're like, "Uh-oh." You know, here we are. I got on a leopard print coat and a red wig. I look as Irish as a black girl can look. And I was like, "Oh shit, we gonna get killed out here." And, you know, that wasn't too often you thought about. You know, that even on the floor of the convention, I never thought we'd get hurt. You know.
Well, you were like, you know, being around drunk, racist, homophobic people in a pride parade isn't probably the safest thing you can do. But you were very willing to put your physical safety out on a limb pretty often, right?
Well, being black is kind of doing that every day anyway. Mm-hmm. You know?
And being in drag, too, you know?
Yeah, hello. Being black is like, "Yeah, there's one."
And cruising those parks, you know, late at night.
Not in a skirt. No. I let some girls do that. I get it, but not me.
You never picked up trade as Joan?
No.
Because I've talked to some pretty famous drag queens who said, as a man, I could get a 6, but as a woman, I could get a 10.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know, maybe, but that other rumor about all drag queens being hung is true. I will, you know, this is a weird thing. But there were a couple times, you know, I was once interviewing some porn star, and he knew what my fetish was, and he took his shoes and socks off and put his feet in my lap. I'm like, I will kill you. Because I cannot stand up. Okay. I cannot stand up. This is not funny. Okay. It was, yeah. I'm like, oh shit. Don't do that. Right. It was wrong.
Did you have sex with him afterwards?
No.
You know, this is a common question we get asked too. It's like, as you've interviewed a lot of people as Joan Jett Black for the queer press.
Yeah.
And and you also did a talk show with Babette in San Francisco at Josie's Juice Bar.
And people
ask us this question, and I can ask you, so I feel comfortable asking you this question. How many of your guests have you ever had sex with before or after the interview?
Well, I would say less than a third, but a few of them.
Wow, that's for us is very rare.
We're like 2,700 podcasts. Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, a third. Yeah.
That would be a lot of dicks.
That'd be a lot of dick, baby. Mm-hmm. You'd be busy right now. But I mean, some of them I knew ahead of time, and some of them I ran into in bathhouses and sex clubs, and you know, that sort of thing. Because, you know, us old queens, we used to do that. We used to go to the baths, honey. Fuck this online chit-chat shit. You know, it's like, let's go.
People still go to the bathhouses. They still go to the bars.
Oh, I know. The basements. I know. I was at a bathhouse just last week. You know, but I don't do the, I miss the walking down the street. Ooh, he's cute. You want to go? Yeah. You know, 5 minutes later, you're in an alley and he's blowing you like there's no tomorrow. And then you're like, thanks, bye. No names would exchange, nothing. And it was wonderful. You know,
yeah.
It was wonderful. I mean, I can't think of one time that I did that. It was bad. You're ugly, you know. And you know what I really loved is up on Lawrence, on the east side of Lawrence, there's that car park along the lake where people, they cruise in the car and pull in next to baby. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun up there. My love, my skin. Any time of the day. Skip had a Trans Am, and you know, a baby blue Trans Am attracts a lot of attention up there.
One time I was riding my bike through there late at night when the park was closing, and there was a female officer on the loudspeaker at her phone. She's just like, put it away, guy. Or it's your last chance for love, guys. Park's closing in 5 minutes. And I was just like, wow.
Well, she really knew
what was up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, in the lagoon, you know where the lagoon is down there, just south of Goethe, that statue of Goethe. And, you know, that lagoon, and then the cop would shine that spotlight slowly through the trees, right? Mm-hmm. And then 50 men come and hands in their pockets. I was just out for a stroll, la, la, la.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. I was in a circle jerk in a downpour and nobody left. Was soaking wet in the middle of the night. Going, it was like a Joe Gage movie. It was fun. You know, so that's what the kids are missing out on now is cinematography sex.
Well, part of this, like the act of just being sexually active, was an act of political resistance. And right now, for a lot of people, being sexually active is almost a commodity, right? So they're advertising to you on dating apps.
That was another thing. After a demonstration, that feeling of camaraderie would get people laid. It would. It was so wonderful to have survived. I'm getting choked up because, you know, there's so many people that you just remember, you know, that even if it was just a tender embrace, It was because we had shared something dangerous, and now we were getting high. You know, it was wonderful. It was a wonderful time, and I think that's, you know, and it was coinciding with this whole, with a little bit of the punk thing. A friend of mine and I were in some punk gay queer symposium here, and people don't remember how close those two movements were. You know, like we were like, they had to have got, they, do they know that's a cock ring they're wearing around their wrist? Or do they think it's just a cute little bracelet? You know.
Well, around that time, Mattel came out with Earring Magic Ken, which had a cock ring around his neck. And to this day, it's the best-selling Barbie doll of all time.
Are you serious?
Yeah, everybody bought one. I remember buying one. And giving them like as a present to friends. It was the most outrageous thing that was happening. And it was interesting because, you know, with Queer Nation, and like I remember reading about your run for president in a history book a year after it happened. And it was this idea that like queer people just being visible, just existing was something extraordinary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was. I mean, I guess because we were in it and doing it, but it really was. That's what Queer Nation was pretty much created to do, was increase our visibility. We'd have those kisses where we go on a straight bar and, you know, suddenly turn to each other and kiss as if we didn't look out of place in a motherfucking straight bar with leather jackets that had queer as fuck stickers all over it. Mm. You know,
when you went to your first kiss in, were you had your eyes set on somebody and they were like, I already brought a date
fuck
for
yeah.
this.
Fuck yeah. Oh, yes. Oh,
did you get in there anywhere?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. But see, that was the spirit of the thing. You get all up in there and not have to go all, you know, and be like, that was fun. See you later.
Yeah, remember that ad campaign is like, a kiss is still just a kiss. And it had a mixed race, even showing a mixed race heterosexual couple was still like something very, you know, outrageous.
And now you see raising in the sun couples all over the place. I'm like, my goodness, they're even letting Asian people on TV these days to sell shit. Asian people. I mean, who knew? Right? Because people, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, here comes the black person. Oh, yeah, and now they have dreads. Ooh, cool. You know? But it's advertising invented television, not the other way around. You know, I'm really convinced of that. Cause
so this past year, you know, Pete Buttigieg, that's how I choose to pronounce his name. is running for president. Yeah. He actually is the first openly gay presidential candidate who actually has a chance.
Well, no, he doesn't. Last week.
Last week. Tell the listener. So he was having a conversation with Black Lives Matter activists.
Well,
and he said, I'm not seeking your vote. I'm not sure why he said that.
Well, because the woman's like,
what he said?
Well, I think this just happened recently. Well, there was a police officer that had killed a black person, right?
Yes.
And so they don't know exactly how or the events that transpired.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Just because a cop killed a black guy doesn't mean that he was unarmed or, you know, we don't know all that yet.
Mm.
And you got to be careful. You can't. I got so mad when. In Chicago, this happened in Chicago. The cops shot a guy who had a gun. He had reached for the gun, and there were protests the next day. I'm like, no. You don't get to do that. Mm. No, he had a gun. He should have been shot. That's what they have guns for, you know. But, you know, if you're running away from the police and you don't have, like, that's different, you know.
Mm.
So in terms of like, you know, sort of reflecting on, you know, President Obama being elected, we went downtown to Chicago to see what would happen because we didn't expect Obama necessarily to win. And we thought, you know, God, people were sick of Republicans at that time. What was your reaction when President Obama was elected that night?
You know, I thought of my grandmother. My grandmother she lived to be 104 years old. This woman live long enough to see her great grandchild and vote for a black man for president. I'm sure she was plucked. Okay. Mm. She was like, okay, I can die now, because nobody, no, it was unbelievable. And, you know, even though he's really just an African, what do you call him, an African? Because he's really not, you know, he's a, you know, mulatto. And that's good, too. But that he won, I remember Oprah and crying and everything.
And in hindsight, Obama's 8 years in office, well, as an anarchist drag queen yourself, you know.
He wasn't the best president. We're not very satisfied. He was all right.
Yeah.
No, anybody who steps into that job, I mean, you know, it's a nasty job. It really is. And
what's the thing I felt with Obama being president, especially his first 2 years in office? Right. He had so much political capital that he wasn't taking advantage of. And part of me was this idea that he somehow, on some deep subconscious level, felt like he didn't deserve to be president. Even though I thought he was an extremely good president for what he could accomplish.
Well, he was one of the smartest ones, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and the way he handled himself, the way he handled the office, you know, they kept comparing him to Kennedy, and even Kennedy didn't have, you know, carry it like he did. Watch some of the things where he went out and went and bought a burger somewhere, and the way people respond to him, it was really wonderful to see.
Yeah, I mean, remember the you know, Fox News just going like, oh, he put Grey Poupon on his burger, you know.
Oh, yeah, he wore a gray suit, or a beige tan suit one day. People went,
Obama said, you're going to miss me when I'm not president. And boy,
he wasn't lying either, honey. He did something really nice for the staff of the White House, too. I don't remember what it was, because they were all, you know, all color folks. And they must have been, you know, wet in their pants, you know. But then that it could turn around the way it did that fast. Somebody out there voted for Obama and Trump. I don't know who these motherfuckers are, but how do you do that, you know? How do you do that?
Do you think, like, Americans are, in some ways, besides being a racist country, we're also very misinformed?
Dumb. Mm-hmm. They're just dumb. They like being dumb. They like it. You know?
It's not just that they're dumb, but they want to be dumb. And part of it is that
they want to be dumb.
It's pleasurable to be proud of your ignorance.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I point you to this is a whole different discussion, but a whole black community that thinks that. Okay. You know, Bill Cosby was right about that. You know,
almost 30 years later, you know, so much has happened politically. Yeah. Here you are kind of living your, you know, relatively quiet existence in a bookstore in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And comes Tina Landau, the director of SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical, and says, hey, we want to tell your life story, or at least this event.
I thought she was bullshitting.
You thought somebody was pranking you?
I thought she was bullshitting, yeah.
What did you say to her?
I said, come on. Me? Why? You know, and she said, why? And I'm like, oh, okay. You know.
What was the reason? There's a lot of stories to tell.
They wanted to tell.
Yeah.
The story that they wanted to tell was local. It was, as the kids say, off the hook. And, you know, it was timely. You know, it doesn't seem so far-fetched after what's gone on. And that they missed it, that this had gone on and people didn't really know about it. You know, but I ended up in a couple really wonderful books because of that. Because I took politics and tried, you know, and did the whole theater thing with it. That, you know, there weren't too many people that did that got any recognition, because they don't to go, oh, okay, that's what this is, you know.
So what was the discussion with like with the creative team when they were working on the project? Were they calling you and asking you questions about it, or how did that work?
They had me come out and I sat with the cast and they asked me questions, you know, but the same way Tina had done. But it was really, I mean, you know, Mr. McCraney is a no fooling actor, and that he would do this, you know.
Now, Terrell Alvin McCraney is the Oscar winner for co-writing Moonlight, which is based on his play. And so he also plays you in the show.
Yes.
And you're like, aren't you a little tall to be Joan Jett Black?
Well, yeah, in the play, they refer to me as being 6'9". Not in a million years.
You're 5'9".
Yeah, not even. Not even. And
you're kind of like Danny DeVito, but black.
Yeah, well, kind of. No, I'm not that short. But, you know, and I don't have a 13-inch tick either. You know, this is a line where he throws his arm down on the table, and I'm like, "Oh my god!" You know,
what was that? Was there any obnoxious or like questions that you were like, "Why are you asking me about this?"
No, I love them all. Even the tough ones. You know, like
what was the most difficult question they asked you?
There's no mention of a lover. There's no mention of somebody close to you. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of what happens. You know, when you're out there like that, it's kind of rare that if you don't already have it, it's going to be hard to get through that kind of a fog.
It's hard to run for president and date at the same time.
It's hard to run for president and date if you're running for president in a dress. You know, you've got to find somebody who can look at the person, not the, you know.
But you were seen as a sex symbol at the time, I remember. You were a fitness instructor. And you had no problem landing a hot man in the sack.
I sure didn't.
So it was more of an emotional thing for you navigating that, or maybe you just didn't want to be in a relationship.
Well, I remember that the first gay pride that I actually walked most of it in, it was so bizarre because people were, you know, Joan Jett Black all day long, right? And then I went home alone that night and I thought, how can that, whoa, I mean, you know, it seemed odd that I was by myself all of a sudden. And it was at first disturbing, but, you know, then I got used to it. But because it seemed to me that wasn't going to happen. I was already, you know, I could have gotten them and gone to the bathroom or something, but it just seemed odd. And who knows? I might not have wanted to, because it's hard to, you know, when you're doing all that, you're done whooping and hollering, and you finally decide, okay, I can take these damn shoes off. It's better sometimes to just be, you know, quiet, be quiet. No.
Do you feel in some ways you deserved to be in a relationship?
No, I've been in two already, and I was pretty fortunate. I've never wanted to be like greedy about that because the two that I was in were both wonderful. They were wonderful. And I know what it's like, you know. Milton and Skip was the first one. We were together 5 years, and Milton and I were together for three. So, you know, I've been there, and I think it's. But I don't know if I could have done that, you know. But I might have been able to. Who knows?
You know, the controversy behind the 2015 Stonewall film.
The one that was
Jonathan Rhys Meyers and Roland Emmerich, director of Independence Day. Part of it is like besides the contention that it's sort of like is this myth of one singular great hero bringing about a revolution, right?
Yes.
And not understanding that it takes a village, people, to bring about change.
Yes, and it did. And it did. And I know, I had the good fortune to know some of those people like Jim Farrar.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
And so were you concerned when the story of Joan Jett Black running for president was going to be turned into a major theatrical production by industry people? Were you worried that there might have been some Disneyfication or oversimplification of it?
How could you do that? And B, it was Tina. It was Tina and Terrell. I knew I was in good hands.
But this is Tina who directed SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical, which is a very lighthearted, very delightful show. And now she's tackling something that's very, very serious.
But she's, you know, she's been wanting to express herself that very way. And it's so, you know, now she's, because she had an opportunity to do something different too. So did he. I mean, by using this story, they got a chance to, and that Steppenwolf, I was more shocked that Steppenwolf was so behind it. But they were like, that's a great idea. Okay.
Well, there's a great movement here in Chicago in the theater that they're just like, listen, we need diverse stories. We need stories about black people, of trans people, people of color, of queer people. Yep. And, you know, we don't really want to see Death of a Salesman again. You know,
again.
We want something new. We want fresh stories, different stories, exciting stories. And so it's really, there's a great push on that. And I applaud them for doing that, because it really is some fantastic things happening right now.
Yeah, and the people that were the donor dinner I went to, the people that are in that room, they were like, some of them motherfuckers had Money.
Oh yeah, right?
And you're like, wow, you know, and they're like, we're so glad to be doing your story, and I'm like, okay,
and you're like, you can write the check out to me directly.
My Venmo account is Terrell.
For real, you know. And I mean, the fucking mayor's daughter was there.
Yeah.
So let me ask you about this, because I was there after the show, and Mayor Daley's daughter, because you, before you ran for president of the United States, you ran for mayor of Chicago. And so that's when people, a lot of people, you first hit the political scene in that sense. And
against Daley.
And Daley's daughter was actually came up to you and was like fangirling you, basically.
Oh my God.
Like, oh my God. I mean, that must have felt kind of weird, because, because, like, you know, you had some bones to pick with her dad.
I sure did, and her grandfather. You know what I mean? This man was horrible, and we said as much. You know, and that she was standing there. You know, that was because I didn't know she. I'm like, who is this? Oh, and Allie went. She's not the one to do this, Joan. This is, you know, Nora Daley, and I was like, no. Whoa. You know, I mean, you just, you know, that's not somewhere you expect to be standing. And she was, I couldn't run or nothing. She was right there going, oh, I love to play. Yeah.
Okay. Do the sins of the father rest on the heads of the daughter?
No, because if she's already giving some money to Steppenwolf Theater, well, she could be like the Koch brothers, though. trying to smooth over both sides. But
did she remember you, though? Because she would have been, so that's why because I would imagine
she did remember me doing it. Yeah, she's probably a child. But
did you ask her for an apology?
No, but I don't know if you remember. I didn't concede. I never conceded. I'm like, kiss my ass, Daley. Right? And I'm sure they hated that picture of him and me on the cover of New City. I know they hated that, because they live in Cicero. They live in the most racist neighborhood in the whole city. You know, a city where we were told when I moved to Chicago, don't be caught in Cicero after dark. Which I don't know why I'd be in Cicero at all, except for some of those trailer park boys. Ooh. You know those dirty white boys? We like that.
Well, at one point in your political career in the 90s, you had a performance art piece at Halsted Street Market Days, the street festival, where you put a bed on the sidewalk and you asked passerbys to create your own scandal with a politician. Yep.
Take your picture in bed with a presidential candidate. Yep. That was so much fun. And that was one of those things that we thought of the night before. Oh, my God, I know what you're going to do. Right? And we ran and got Charlie's bed and carried it all the way over there. And I'm sure that there are people who have pictures somewhere. I'd kill for a picture of that, you know, because that was a riot all day long. People were like, what? This is what?
How right frisky there, did you get little... with the people who are in love with you?
What do you mean? That day taking pictures?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it depended on if they were wearing shoes or not, darling.
Oh. You know? Are you still a foot freak?
Yes. Well, yeah. I don't know about that word. Yeah.
Enthusiast.
Yeah, we have our proclivities. Yes.
Right.
Well, that you was know? Kind of like a thing, right, for a lot of drag performers to be into feet.
I didn't know that.
Vaginal Cream Davis. Who's famous backup vocalist was RuPaul.
Yeah. You know what
she
did
was
here
known
Chicago?
For shrimping the hot boys in the audience, and she even sang a song like Cherries
about
in the
shrimping.
Snow. Yeah.
We did an entire show here at a club. What was the name of that club? But we, you know, Vaginal Cream Davis and Joan Jett Black present, and we did shrimping on stage.
Who's the better shrimper?
The two of us. I'm not much for the whole oral thing. I'm more of a massage kind of guy myself. You know what I mean? She's better at it.
She would put whipped cream on these guys' toes and put cherries in them, and then just gobble them up like it was a sundae.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun because I got my hands on a lot of feet that day too. Sometimes it was the same boy. And that led to some fun later, too.
You know, you're kind of like an elder statesman of the LGBTQ, you know, history, political world. And sometimes talk to people like Larry Kramer, there's a little bit of saltiness that, like, our community didn't do enough, that somehow they failed, you know, our ability to live up to the promise of a rainbow. Do you share that sentiment, or do other times that you feel like, you know, your community let you down personally?
No, I do share that sentiment, and I do, you know, it's no accident that fags are fashion designers and interior designers and singers, and we make it all more beautiful. We always have, and it's where you are. It's the role you've been given, if you can go there, because I really kind of backed away from all of that, too. Even as a fairy, it's like, no, I don't need shit in the sky. But our role, and it's such a, I think it's a very good place to be. But, you know, when you live in a Christian Puritan world, they're gonna fuck with all that. But any history of any culture, and you find Berdash or androgyny and, you know, all these, and we were healers, you know, that's not an accident. And it's been going on throughout history, you know.
What was your reaction to seeing finally the final version of Miss Black for President, when you're sitting there in the audience and you're going, wow, this will live on past my own life?
I wanted everyone that I'd been friends with to see it.
Yeah.
To be able to share that moment with me, because there are so many people who would be like, you're fucking kidding me. What? You know, and it's wonderful. I thought my mom and dad have lived long enough to, you know, think, wow. You know, my mom wants the wig I had on the other night. And they've always been great, but I said to her, so you tell your friends that you have a son that ran for president? No, she said, oh, yeah. I said, but do you tell them I did it in a dress? Or do you leave that out for them to figure it out? You know, because maybe she does. You know, I don't know. But that's a good thing that, you know, my family was around to, I could share this with them, you know, and see, like, see, wearing dresses and being a big old sissy does come up, you know, make it come. It does pay off, you know. I've been, you know, people say, you're gay. No, I'm not. I'm a sissy, okay? Now I'm an old sissy, so don't fuck with me. Yeah, don't fuck with me, because we've been there and we've done that already. And, but it's also very humbling. It's like, what, me? Wow. But, you know,
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Reacting to sort of the way that drag has been very much embraced by, you know, certainly RuPaul's Drag Race has done a lot to give drag queens big bucks and big careers.
There is talent there. There is real talent there. Todrick Hall blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't.
Well, he's on American Idol, too, you know, and part of it is like reality televisions depending on this diversity to engage audiences. And I imagine, you know, and I'm like I listen to a lot of like young drag queens and they're very concerned with the way their makeup is and not what they're saying and doing.
Yeah, that's been my thing about RuPaul. RuPaul tends, he used to really only talk about how fabulous he is. You know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we know that. Yeah, we get that, you know. But now he's, especially when he's not in drag, he tends to talk more about inclusiveness now. He did an interview with Anna Wintour where they said, I know, like, this woman knows, you know, she's so far removed from everything.
That's a Devil Wears Prada lady, right?
Well, yes, she's the editor of Vogue. The editor House of Wintour. Yeah. Wintour is coming.
Yes, Anna Wintour.
Have you been following Pose?
Huh?
Have you been following Pose on FX? Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Billy Porter. Wow. Yeah, the shit, honey.
He's getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yes, she is. Okay.
Amen.
And what did he say? I don't think RuPaul has a star.
I think RuPaul has a star, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's great to hear somebody say, oh, yeah, if I feel like wearing a dress, I'm going to wear a dress, you know. Of course, remember what Boy George said when he won his Grammy? Do you remember what he said?
No.
He said, it's nice to know that America knows a good drag queen when they see one. Aww. It's the first time he ever, you're like, oh, that's cute.
Because he never really called himself a drag queen before, did he?
Not before then. No. This is probably 83. That's the first time he won.
I remember that you were really into pun humor and jokes, and you were obsessed with somebody getting the name Boy George Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah, because celebrity monsters.
Yeah.
I love that. If you can be all of those celebrities at one time, you are a monster. If you can be Boy George Michael Jackson. That's a scary thing. Okay, Boy George Michael Jackson. What was the other one that came in? Tennessee Ernie Ford. Wait, what was it? No. Rick James Brown. Wait, Rick James Brown something else. You know.
I know it was Rick James Brown something. Yeah, I forgot about the other one.
Yeah. There was Lee Harvey Oswald Radziwill. Because that's really. People are like, why is that so funny? That's her sister. Her sister was Lee Radziwill.
Yeah.
Lee Harvey Oswald shot her husband. You know, I'm like, oh, that's
old
sick.
Queen humor, girl.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, that is old queen humor. Are you kidding? I watched Auntie Mame last night. Okay. Aww. Old queen humor.
Life is a buffet. I'm a big old. Most suckers are starving to death.
Yes. Are we all licked? No, I know every line in that movie. Every line. That movie, The Women. The Women, you know.
Jungle
you
Red.
I know.
Oh, Mary.
Our One Piece Foundation garment zips up the back and no bones.
I'd rather have the bone.
So, Terrence, after all this time in Chicago, you finally got dressed up in drag again as Joan Jett Black, this time with a silver-haired wig, and you did your talk show with Babette.
Yeah. Oh, that was so much fun.
What was the experience you being in drag after so many years?
There is a drag performer that if you haven't heard of him, you probably have because you're good. Ray Bourbon. Ray Bourbon has a song that you can get on some website where he says, I'm back in drag again and I love it. Mm. Yeah.
That's Red River was from the 1930s and usually did.
Red River was from the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
But his humor, he's the queen of the double entendre. And there were some good people.
She served time in prison and she died there after being an accomplice to murder.
Oh, a drag queen who murdered someone?
Yeah.
He's so funny. He sent, it was had something to do because he had like 70 dogs and he had to leave these dogs in care of somebody, and I think some of them died, and he didn't know why, and he sent these two boys to rough this guy up. Well, they roughed the guy up, and they killed him.
Oh,
so, and this was after he, you know, there was, but the records are amazing, amazing. Mm. His delivery is.
Well, that's kind of similar to the Carl Switzer, the guy who played Alfalfa in The Little Rascals. He was shot dead because he trained dogs for a living, and one dog got lost and he had a reward for it, and some drunk guy found the dog and he was like didn't want to pay him, and so the guy just turned around and shot him dead.
You know, I've always wanted to do. Remember Hollywood Babylon? Remember that book?
Yeah.
Kenneth Anger. I want to do a book like that, but about the black music industry. Mm. Honey, the dirt is never ending. It's never ending. I mean, James Brown, Chuck Berry,
Little Richard,
Whitney, who got Houston, the most ass? Little Richard. You know, it goes on and on. Little Anthony, you know, being. I'm not a juvenile delinquent. And he was, right? You know, I mean, all kinds of amazing. Al Green and the Grits. All kind of things. Mm. Teddy Pendergrass letting the drag queen drive and she drove off the cliff. Whoa, yeah, I can go on.
I want that book. Joan, for people that...
Oh, yeah, right?
What was your act like, though? Because you were a working drag queen long before you ever ran for president. Were you a lip-sync queen?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you a hostess queen?
I was a lip-sync. I did do lip-sync and I loved it. But I had gone to a theater school, you know.
Whoa.
So I'm like, you know, there are tricks one can use. One, I would use a dummy mic.
I remember when Madonna Blonde Ambition, all these drag queens took coat hangers and glued black cotton balls to it to create a wireless mic for themselves.
That's so hot.
Oh, yeah, honey.
Because
I loved opera, I did.
Yeah.
The opera was called, the aria is called Ebenandro Lantana. It's the opera that was eventually used in the movie Diva.
Mm.
But I had a copy of Renato Tebaldi doing it. And I went and got the libretto and learned every word. Because if you're going to lip sync, you better be good.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to know that these old white queens were through, okay? They're like, the picture's doing opera, right? The black queens were like, who the fuck is this? Right? It was so good. And I did Broccoli. Broccoli is Brenda Lee's half-sister, so that I could do Patsy Cline, because I loved Patsy Cline. So I had a whole, like, I had lots of little tricks up my sleeve, and it worked, you know. I did.
Did you ever do like any kind of gymnastics or ballroom dance moves, like a death drop a dip?
No. This was 1975, honey. No. No. I stopped because I was taking hormones. I was on my way for getting a sex change.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, because the first time somebody told me I was pretty or really attractive, I was in drag, right? And I thought, hey, maybe they've got a point. But that's not a good enough reason to get your dick cut off. It's not.
Well, they don't cut it off.
Who's
they
laughing in the background?
They slice it open
they
and they invert it.
Something.
They invert it.
Who's in the background but it was right scary. Now listening, cackling?
My nipples were big. I was scared. I'm like, no, because I was trying to do it without a doctor, right? I'm just gonna do it. But yeah, he is recording this. Yeah,
who is this in the background?
That's my friend. That's my friend David back there.
Hi, David.
My friend David.
So how long were you taking? Yes. Were you just taking birth control pills? Were you doing like the Renegade kind of thing?
They were purple hormone pills. That's all I remember. I don't remember what they were called. But they were doing, my nipples got to about size of a half bell and scared the shit out of me. I'm like, I can't do this, right? And I left everything and moved to Chicago. I'm like, I gotta go.
So this was 74?
Probably
77. I think the birth control pills you're talking about is, I googled it, Trinessa.
Oh, honey, I don't know. All I know is it didn't mix well with Quaaludes, and you're too young to remember Quaaludes.
But that was my nicknameme when I was a kid, because people said that I was like Quaaludes. I was just like, what? Okay.
That was some serious shit right there, too. Quaaludes and mescaline. Oh, that was fun. You know.
So it's a 50-year anniversary of Stonewall.
50 years.
What have you done for, as Janet Jackson would say, what have you done for me lately?
Well, you know what I did? Sunday, I saw this video on YouTube, and it was just the names of, and what their profession was, of every actor, dancer, artist, you know, who had died of AIDS. Klaus Nomi and Derek Jarman and all these people. This movie, just names, was 46 minutes long.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, right? You're like, oh, my, that many? That many? And so I got the bright idea. I'm going to write every name out on Facebook. I'm going to put their names. Right? And it's just pretty much just to say their names. So then, you know, people see it and read it. And it took me 6 hours to do that. I'm not the, what is it, redacting, I'm a hunt and peck kind of typist, so. But that's, you know, I really, a couple people notice, it's just nice that these people, you know, aren't forgotten. That's my theme, this, I don't want people to be forgotten, you know.
Because well, you won't be forgotten, so you know.
Well, no, I don't, but, you know, the Danny
Sotomayor. Would you trade your ability to be forgotten for other people not to be forgotten?
Well, I don't know if it would have to come to that.
a bargain with the devil there.
Right. I don't know about that one.
What would you like to see future queer generations do that somehow we've lost along the way?
Go back to the radical. Go back to being dangerous. Go back to being something that, you know, people are a little scared of, but they want to do it because it's so cool, you know. This whole assimilationist, you know, no. I never marched for marriage in my entire life. And I think it's okay. It's a badge or something, but that's not what we were fighting for. You know, we still have
you weren't fighting really for gays in the military and marriage equality in 1992.
In a different way, not the way that people think we were. You know, I wanted to do away with the military altogether.
You wanted to switch the funding between education and the military.
Yes, how wonderful that would be, right? You know, trillions upon trillions of dollars for education. And almost nothing. And what's the woman's name that runs the education department? Her, for the military.
DeVos.
That creep.
Put her on the front lines. DeVos. Hey, you're excited about politics this year, and there's certainly a lot of candidates. Who's floating your boat?
There's only, you know.
I'm not asking you for an endorsement, by the way. I'm just asking, like, you know, who are you excited about?
You mean for the presidential thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or anything. I really have no idea. I don't, you know, booty jig.
Just remember, like a drag queen, it's booty judge.
Booty judge. Unless I see him sucking some dick, I'm not going to believe he's gay. Okay. I don't buy it. I think it's an act, but I'm
exaggerating. What if he's the top?
Well, I want to see that too. I love porn. I see a guy, I'm imagining him naked. I just do. I don't know. You know, Kamala, she's all right, Kamala Harris, but she was a prosecutor. I don't trust that.
She's like the principal of your high school that likes to yell at the students.
Yes. She did one great thing, though.
Yeah.
After she announced, you know, it came out that her and Willie Brown had fucked a few times, and they both said, so? Now, that's power. You can be like, so?
Well, you ran against Willie Brown in San Francisco.
I did. And even though I had done a couple of really nice things with him, He came on the show once, and he made me honorary mayor of San Francisco for the during the film festival once, you know. Mm-hmm. But then when he said, if you can't afford to live in San Francisco, maybe you don't need to live in San Francisco. I was like, fuck you, nigga. Like, just like, no, no, you will not. And I started, and I, you know, announced, and that day that I announced, you know, all the TV cameras down on Fifth and Market, there was a man in a wheelchair, old black guy in a wheelchair, and he motioned me over. It turns out that he was one of the Tuskegee flyers. And he said he'd been following Mike, you know, and he liked me. And I'm like, if you make me cry with all this eye makeup on, you'll be going down in another plane, sir. But I mean, moments like that happen. Mm. That's really, you know, because he was an old man. Okay. But and once Tom Amiano entered it, I thought, I don't have the, you know, I don't want
to. So for a bit, you actually did consider, you know, getting involved in political politics for actual office.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, because, yeah. And I was really close to Dennis Cooper. So what? Now I can't think of his name. He ran for governor and he was a legalized weed, but I can't. It'll come to me.
Jerry Brown?
No. Dennis. I just can't think of his last name. But he had pot clubs down here long before, you know. Dennis Perone. Thank you, Dennis Perone. Who also had a great little house on the hill that I am not going into any detail about. But and because I worked in a different light, I saw all these wonderful people all the time. Susie Bright, all the time, you know, all these wonderful people. So this was a great place to be connected, you know, it really was. That's how I ended up one of the Pomo Afro Homos.
With Brian Freeman, yeah.
Yeah, because they would come into the bookstore, and then Jola, who was one of the fairies in Minneapolis, was also in the Pomos, and he said, he asked me, would I fill in for him? Next thing I know, I'm a Pomo. Yeah, so that's really, that's a wonderful thing to have happened to me.
Yeah, and it's I guess it's the anniversary also of Tongues Untied, the experimental documentary film that Marlon Riggs did with Brian Freeman.
I never met Marlon, but I did know Essex Hemphill.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun. She was a riot, too.
Well, honey, it's time to put the band back together.
I know I want to do the talk show again so bad. I'm looking for a producer.
Do it.
Because I can't do it.
So
I can't,
an ideal situation, you want to be in San Francisco doing some type of like live event in front of an audience?
No, the live talk show, but I want to do a podcast. I want to do, because there's so much music, queer music history that I'd love to talk about. Mm.
The exciting space is live streaming, like, you know, T.S. Madison does. That's where the audience for that kind of content is, I think.
Live streaming. Yeah. Okay.
Just turn on your phone and be like, is this thing on? Go. Is this bitch recording? What's up, Facebook and YouTube land, and Twitter
land? And I thrive in that environment. Mm-hmm. I really do. So I'm live streaming. Okay. Because I got some couple people out here that, you know, not a producer, but there's so much. There's always so much going on.
If you build it, they will come.
Let me tell you. Yes, they will. And I must say that I am plugged into, you know, some wonderful people.
Joan Jett Black, thank you so much for, I know you're really busy, you know.
Yeah.
Smoking pot.
smoking that there ganja and you making my. Making
now
my,
that you're a celebrity making, again, I appreciate you taking a lot of time to talk to us today.
Thank you. It's so good to talk to you. It's you and your muscles. Muscles, okay? You did not have no
you're
muscles.
You're a fitness instructor. You had the same body when you were my age.
I love how you said that. When I was your age, but I can't. I hope I get to see you again soon. And I can't wait to hear this. And I might pick your brain about that live streaming thing.
Mm-hmm. Do it,
because that's honey. Right up my alley.
Call back anytime.
You know,
Call us okay. anytime, honey.
All right. Thank you both, and have a good evening.
Bye-bye. Terrence Allen Smith, the creator, the visionary behind the drag persona of Joan Jett Black, lives in San Francisco.
You can check out her run for the presidency at Steppenwolf Theater's production of Ms. Black for President. It is running now through July 21st, and it's a phenomenal cast. You heard on the show the other day, we talked to Molly Brennan, and hopefully soon we'll talk to one of the co-authors, Tina Landau.
Yeah, and to me it's like, you know, because I was there for much of this too, it was really exciting and thrilling to sort of walk down memory lane mm-hmm. and see a big, you know, well-financed, very slick production of what was mostly very grassroots, very modest mm-hmm. theatrical experiences.
But, you know, queer people know how to do it, and they know how to do it right. And they can, you know, they can take a shoestring and they can turn it into a beautiful velvet ribbon.
Well, and certainly a lot of these stickers that Queer Nation would print out on adhesive mm-hmm. paper. We would go to like a
Kinko's,
which people don't know is a photocopy center. Mm-hmm. And we would print just the word homo or fag or, you know, like queer on it and stick it on our clothing, stick it anywhere we could.
And it was fashion.
It was fashion, and the stage itself is designed to be built on those stickers that mm-hmm. we would post everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's like very emotional to see, you know, Futura Extra Bold Condensed bring back to life the spirit and sensibility of a very, very intimate and very formative time for so many great artists and for myself, too.
For sure. And I want to remind folks, too, we can't talk to people like Terrence Allen Smith. Did I say his name right?
Yeah, but so don't sorry. Correct yourself.
I want to remind folks that we couldn't talk to people like Terrence Allen Smith if it weren't for you and your membership at feastoffun.com/plus. Your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun. It's another great way to support the podcast and get a glimpse behind the scenes.
And we're posting a couple of like never before seen photos and goodies from back in the scene mm-hmm. at our Patreon, just exclusive, just for you guys. Oh, membership does have its privileges, honey. And it's just a dollar. I know you got a dollar sitting somewhere. So, you know, hand it over. Tip a girl, tip a queen, and make your presence be felt and seen. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.